Hello, Tech fans, and welcome into episode 181 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, originating from TSL's High Tech Studios in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. What a fun podcast we have planned for you today. We are going to be discussing the Mount Rushmore of Virginia Tech football players, men's basketball players, and all other sports at Virginia Tech, according to Will, Chris, and I. It is going to be a very fun podcast. We can't wait to interact with you as we discuss this very fun podcast on Tuesday, June 15th. All that and more coming up right now, episode 181 of the Tech Sideline Podcast that gets started right now. Whether you are watching live or archived on YouTube, listening on the following platforms, whether it is Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher, we're so glad you could join us as we record on Tuesday morning, June 15th. Our crew today, as always, to my left, our managing editor here at TechSideline.com, Chris Coleman. Across the way, our founder and general manager, he is Will Stewart. Behind the scenes, the best podcast producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart. And I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes. Great to have all of you with us. A reminder, if you're watching live on YouTube, if you want to drop a question to Will or Chris, we'll get to those at the end of the podcast. But I'm pretty sure for today's episode, if you want to chime in an athlete that you think is deserving of being on the, I guess we'll call it the Tech Sideline Mount Rushmore of different topics, go ahead and drop it in the chat and we will read those as the show progresses. I'll talk about the rules and everything that goes into the Tech Sideline Mount Rushmore in just a little bit. But before that, you know, if you're watching live on YouTube right now or even archive, Will, there are a couple of things you can do to greatly help Tech Sideline.
Click, like, and subscribe. Thank you very much. And comment, particularly on the archived version. So appreciate everybody
comment after this ends and it's archived on there.
Remember, we are hosted by the Jim Nance Award winner for 2021. And I'm jacked for today's podcast because I actually did research and prepared.
You know, Chris, I feel like we always have tangents in the middle of the season where we sit and look at each other and say, wow, we spent a little too much time on this, but this would be a great summer podcast. I think today's topic...
I agree. I mean, there's only so much you can talk in the summer. I mean, how many times do you want to talk about who's going to be the starting quarterback? How many times do you want to talk about Justin Fuente's job status? I mean, at some point, you have to stop and talk about other things.
Right.
I agree. So I think the summer, more stuff like this, I think, would be a good break the monotony a little bit.
Plus some guests. We need to get some guests in.
I've got a couple lined up.
How about this? Caleb Fields chimes into the chat right now. Watching live from Okinawa, Japan. Just arrived here for a 2-month deployment with the USAF. How about that?
This is interesting.
That's incredible, Caleb.
Like, if you're in another country watching the podcast, let us know because I think that's pretty cool. You know, I've got a buddy. He's back in the States now, but his wife was stationed in England for a while, and he would watch the podcast from England. So I know we've had watchers from the UK. We now know we have watchers from Japan. And I know there's plenty of military Hokies out there that are stationed in Germany and, you know, wherever. So if you're stationed in another country, let us know.
Now, I will say this to Caleb. I don't know what Caleb's personal / marital status is, but a high school buddy of mine was stationed in Okinawa for a while, and he came back with a wife. I'll just leave that out there.
It's 10:30 p.m. right now, Caleb says. And for all of our those in the military serving us abroad, thank you for your service. And thank you, Caleb, at 10:30 at night in Japan, watching live the Tech Sideline Podcast. That's pretty cool.
We'll keep him awake.
We'll see if we can keep him awake till midnight in Japan. We probably will.
Maybe he'll listen to half the podcast in the morning. But anyways, great show planned for today. We're really excited to talk about the Mount Rushmore of Virginia Tech athletics. We're going to go through individual football athletes on a separate Mount Rushmore, then men's basketball athletes on one Mount Rushmore, and then all other sports on one Mount Rushmore.
We're not doing coaches. This is players only.
Correct. Right. No coaches. I'll explain the rules in a little bit, but and it's only college. It's only based on your collegiate record stats. No professional right. stats included, right. draft picks.
That, and maybe one day we could do like a football coach administration thing, because there's one guy in particular that I don't think anybody watching this podcast has ever heard of that I think would probably be number one on the list if we did a coach administration thing as far as their impact on Virginia Tech athletics. So then maybe that could be a different topic for
the good day. News is it's June 15th and we still have like 2 months before we really get going into a our two podcasts a week previewing and getting ready for the upcoming game, which we'll be here before we know it. A reminder, Tech Sideline Podcast is presented by the Southeast Regional Training Center. You can go to southeastrtc.com to get involved with one of the best wrestling programs in the entire country, led by our friend Coach Tony Roby. Southeast Regional Training Center, helping Virginia Tech wrestling be the best. southeastrtc.com is the website. But before we get into the Mount Rushmore, I do want to start off the podcast with some great news that'll make not just Hokie fans excited, but I think sports fans excited in general. It was announced earlier this week, Monday, June 14th, Lane Stadium, 100% capacity in the fall.
Yep.
How exciting is that, Chris?
Well, you know, I knew it was going to be that way. Like, the reason Virginia Tech waited longer than, like, UVA is because, you know, hotels are limited in this area, and Tech was afraid that as soon as they made the announcement, all the hotels would fill up just like that. And so they wanted to give all the players' parents time to book hotels for all the game, and that's why they delayed a couple weeks after UVA made their announcement. But, yeah, I always assumed it would be 100%. But yeah, it'll be something. That first game against UNC –
yeah, that first game at UNC against UNC starts at 6 p.m. And I put when sunset is sundown. Yeah, so
halftime.
So it won't be dark when the game starts.
Second half under the lights.
But you will have all day to tailgate. But be careful; it's early September. We've had some blistering hot games in early September. So be sure to hydrate.
This is exciting though, because you know it's been a challenging year and a half for, you know, all of us in different ways, some people more than others. But, you know, you think back to last May, right? And you think, gosh, how much longer is this going to go on? Is this going to affect the college football season? And, you know, little did we know that there wouldn't be fans in the stands for around the country. And here we are. It just feels like it's been.
Last summer was so, like, normally, like, summers in this job, yeah, we work, but, like, you're mentally relaxed a little bit in the summer. You take a mental break. Last summer was not that way at all, because you're just worried whether there's going to be a football season or not. And if there's not, what the heck are we going to write about? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
So it's like, it was last summer was very, very stressful mentally. And then the season starts. So it's like this is our first mental break in 2 years.
Yeah. I put on Twitter the other day that I started going through my DVR and I pulled up the NC State game from, I think it was played on September 26th. That was Tech's first game. Now, Tech was supposed to play before then.
Oh, yeah, had two games canceled. Remember, NC State was, they were supposed to open up against UVA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that got pushed back. And then, no. First, they were going to open against NC State. And that got canceled due to NC State's COVID. And then it was UVA, and that got canceled because Tech's COVID issues.
Yeah.
So
I was watching that game, and you know, Tech played a great game that night, but it just, I couldn't watch more than about, of course, Tech led 17-0. Then the first quarter, so I saw most of the good stuff. But I just couldn't watch it. It was too quiet, nobody in the stands, and I am so glad that's behind us.
It was a glorified scrimmage.
Now, I will admit that there's still a part of me that won't believe until we actually see it. And part of that is not to venture into territory we don't want to go, but there's still talk out there of variants and not enough people getting vaccinated and things like that. And I just don't trust until it actually happens. Sorry, but I can't be like, yeah, and totally commit yet. Although I will say this, we were at the beach last week or the week before, and I did get a new cooler, so I'm very psyched for tailgating season.
Well, capacity, no capacity, I'm tailgating on September 3rd.
I think so.
They're not going to stop me from doing that.
I tell you what,
that's true.
Someone asked me the other day what my favorite Enter Sandman moment is, and I told that person, I said, listen, I think one of my favorite ones was actually baseball of this past year when they started letting 1,000 fans in the North Carolina series. And the reason I say that is because it was packed, people were jumping, and I was like, oh my goodness, if there's 100% capacity for North Carolina on September 3rd, and you could just feel, I said it felt like Hokie Nation was bottled up for 365 days. And for those 1,000 fans in the park at English Field early March, it all came out. So I just think that is going to be, you know, the people that might not jump for Enter Sandman, they're going to jump for that one.
So if somebody asks you what's your favorite Enter Sandman, and your answer is it hasn't happened yet.
I think
it's going to happen in September.
I think it's going to be, and keep in mind too, yes, North Carolina's a big opponent. It's national television, but even if it was, you know, a Delaware, I still think that first Sandman back after everything, you know, not being in the stands last year would be a memorable one.
Are we doing the Mount Rushmore of Enter Sandman moments?
There you go. We're teasing that for our future podcast to come. A couple other notes I do want to touch on real quick. Coach Justin Fuente and Virginia Tech football continue to add alums to their staff, and a former great safety, Kyshawn Jarrett, has been added to the staff for Virginia Tech. Chris has a great article up on TechSideline.com right now, and you bring up a great point, Chris. 2016, the Virginia Tech graduates were full-time employees. There were three in 2016. That would have been Justin Fuente's first season,
they
correct?
They were all strength and conditioning coaches.
It was Jarrett Ferguson, Ryan Schumann, and Nick Acree.
Acree.
Now, you've got Justin Hamilton, J.C. Price, Jack Tyler, Ryan Sherman, Pearson Prelew, Jaron
Gouveia-Winslow.
Kyshawn Jarrett, who's, by the way, the assistant director of player personnel, and then Mark Dithorn.
Is it Dithorn? I think it's pronounced Dithorn.
So, my apologies there if I'm at, but that's nine now in full-time roles with started with Hamilton, a defensive coordinator.
Like eight of them are like full-time, or is it seven of them?
It's eight. I apologize. That's bad
math. It's eight, and seven of them are former players. So
yeah, so there's a – I think there's a cynical reaction of, oh, he's just kind of packing this. I think one of the things Justin Fuente's probably learned is that there are some unique things about the Virginia Tech culture. And in order to properly sell Virginia Tech to recruits, you have to have people on staff that understand the history and the culture.
In order to properly sell the program to your own fan base, you have to apparently have. But I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I'm an advocate of hiring Virginia Tech graduates and alums and football alums and things like that, you know, if they're fully qualified.
If they're qualified.
But, like, I don't want to go out there and just hire this guy, oh, because he went to Virginia Tech.
Right.
Like you know, you see some people throwing out suggestions like, oh, Michael Vick, quarterback's coach, D'Angelo Hall, cornerback's coach. Like, these people have never coached at any level before.
Michael's also making a good amount of money at
the
Fox Sports
right
now.
Yeah, making a pretty good chunk of change working for Fox. I'm a 100% advocate, you know, if they're qualified coaches and they're qualified for their jobs. And you know, I think all these guys on staff right now are fully qualified for the positions that they hold. The Kyshawn Jarrett hire makes perfect sense. I mean, he was basically player personnel quality control with the Redskins.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago. So, you know, if he's qualified for that at the NFL level, he's certainly qualified for that at the ACC level. So, the hire makes complete sense. I had heard that Corey Fuller was leaving to go to the NFL, but I didn't know how he was going to be replaced or how quickly he would be replaced. But once it got announced, it made complete sense.
I also announced Leah Joseph, Virginia Tech's director of on-campus recruiting. Her dad, Bernard Joseph, played football at Tech, was Bruce Smith's roommate.
Right, so she's technically not a Hokie. Forget where she went to school.
She went to Georgia Southern to play volleyball.
Play volleyball, right. Technically not a Hokie, but, you know, that's not the diploma on her wall, but, you know, it's in her blood, obviously.
It's in family, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you definitely see a heavy Virginia Tech tilt on the coaching staff right now. And I think that's for two reasons. I do think it's because all those people are fully qualified for their jobs, and I think they're all good hires. But I also think it's, okay, well, let's throw the former players who were complaining about not being involved
not,
in the program.
Not being
let's throw them a bone. Let's throw the fans a bone who want more Tech fans or Tech people on the staff. Now, remember, Tech fans, if you want Justin Fuente fired, which some people do, then that also means all eight or nine of those people that we just named get fired, most likely.
Right.
All those Virginia Tech alums, all those, you know, Jack Tyler, Justin Hamilton, J.C. Price, everybody we just named.
Right.
Right. So, remember that.
Real quick, Kyshawn Jarrett, I know I don't have a ton of years of Tech football, but biggest hit, hardest hit I've ever seen in person, without a question.
I don't remember who it was against, but I remember
it was Pittsburgh about the 20-yard line, and Kyshawn Jarrett. It was a legal hit too.
Yeah.
And he just blew up. They called it an incomplete pass, by the way. It should have been a fumble.
Right.
But just blew that guy up on the sideline, and I always remember Kyshawn Jarrett for that. So he's now part of the staff. Again, that's now 8 full-time former players.
And he'd still be playing in the NFL right now, most likely, if he hadn't been injured. He started on like 6 games as a rookie.
For the Washington football team. Right?
The football team.
Anyways, that's the other piece of news going on with Virginia Tech. Another piece of news that I want to touch on real quick, and we could spend a long time on this. I know that sports talk radio shows have been doing around the country. But the college football playoff, chance that it expands to 12 teams for the 2023 college football season. Currently, it's at 4 teams right now. Of course, it went from the BCS model, college football playoff starting in 2014 with the semifinal and the championship, and now potential for 12 teams. And, Will, what I find really interesting about this is, let's say you're playing in that first round of the playoff. If you're playing in a conference championship, if they don't alter the schedule, there's a chance you might have to play – was it 17
games?
17
is what it calculates out to.
So what were your initial reactions when you heard it, A? And B, what do you think it means for Virginia Tech if they indeed do go to a 12-team model?
I don't think it means a lot for Virginia Tech. That's kind of hard to think about when you consider where the program is right now. Virginia Tech's a 500 football team right now. So, you know, CFP is not even in the conversation at this point. I'm sorry, but that's just the truth.
Right.
That's what you want to work towards. Mm-hmm. And certainly, if the program improves and can aspire to those sorts of things, then 12 is better than 4 because it's really hard to make that 4.
Yeah.
And I read the article that laid out all the arguments for going to 12 as opposed to doing a half measure of 8 or something like that. And it was – it was fairly convincing.
On-campus playoff games would be cool to watch, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine actually Virginia Tech hosting a playoff game and you've got 1 week to get your tickets and everything like that, the build-up to that game?
Yeah. I don't know. They give a lot of lip service to the welfare of the student-athlete, and that's a lot of games. Like, I was looking at the Virginia Tech's 2001 season where they played 11 regular season games and then a bowl game.
Yeah.
12 games, you're done.
Yep.
17 games is 5 more games than that.
That's more than an NFL team plays that if you don't make the
playoffs.
Well, actually, wait.
No,
NFL
this year will be 17.
Will it really? Wow.
Yeah.
Not to go down this path, but are they going to have 2 bye weeks in the NFL?
No, just one.
They're still sticking with
one.
I know
the schedule's unbalanced now, of course, since
right.
You know, some teams will play more home games than others. I don't understand the – anyway.
Yeah. So part of me – I know this won't happen because money, but part of me wondered – Will a 12-team playoff generate enough money, and will it be distributed in a way such that you can actually cut the number of regular season games back to 11?
Yeah,
that won't happen.
Just ban the FCS games, for goodness sakes?
Number of games is like taxes. Once they are raised, they don't get cut, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well said.
That's very well said. I think the playoffs, you know, it has the potential to benefit Virginia Tech. 12 team playoff has the potential to benefit Virginia Tech and a lot of other teams. But quite frankly, the last time Virginia Tech finished in the top 12 in either the BCS or the college football playoff rankings was 2011.
Was it?
And you know, depending on the automatic bids and everything like that, Tech wasn't a conference champion that year, so I don't know if they would have gotten in that year. They could have. Maybe, maybe not, but they wouldn't have gotten in as a conference champion. The last time they definitely would have got in under a 12-team format would have been 2010.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago, man.
Baby steps. Let's just try to win the Coastal.
Right. Our goal right now as a program, you know, this is Clemson and the rest.
Right.
That's what the ACC is right now, Clemson and the rest. And everybody else's goal is to try to be the best of the rest. And if you can reach that goal, then you can start thinking about the playoffs.
Well, you think about this, too, for Virginia Tech being in the Coastal. If you can win the Coastal, get to the ACC Championship, and be at that 10-2, right?
An extra game, and it knocks you out of the playoff spot.
Yeah.
Right. Which I'm not an advocate. I think conference championship games they were started up because they were a moneymaker.
So, back in 1990 when conferences were making, I'm not exaggerating, $15 million a year from their TV contracts.
Right.
they had conference championship games, which would generate just in one game another $6 to $8 or $10 million.
Huge difference in your bottom line.
It was a big deal. They're noise level right now, far as money goes.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it again. College football playoff. I don't think it's is it official yet? I was reading. I mean, I think they have to vote on it this week.
It's a recommendation, I think.
And I think they actually don't vote on it until later in the fall.
There you go.
I think.
That's the proposal. 12 teams, and that would start in 2023. All right. The chat is blowing up. We've got people watching from South Dakota, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Okinawa, Japan. Wherever you happen to be watching live or wherever you happen to be listening, we're glad you did so as we're recording on Tuesday morning, June 15th. We're going to step aside for our break, but when we come back, the Mount Rushmore of Virginia Tech football players, the Mount Rushmore of Virginia Tech men's basketball players, and the Virginia Tech Mount Rushmore of all other sports. It's going to be a great podcast. We're excited to dive into it. We're back in just a moment as you're watching and listening to episode 181 of the Tech Sideline Podcast presented by the Southeast Regional Training Center. Welcome back into this very fun episode of the Tech Sideline Podcast, edition number 181. Evan Hughes back alongside of Chris Coleman and Will Stewart, Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes. The chat is already starting to blow up, so if you're watching live, before you comment, you can like
and subscribe.
And if you're David Cunningham watching from your couch in Fox Ridge, what are you doing, man? It's summer in Blacksburg. You should be at the Fox Ridge pool right now.
We're floating down the river.
Yeah, right. And so we're going to be working you to death a month, so you need to really take your vacation.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Now,
yeah, enjoy that's it. Exciting. DC gets started soon, right? He's the new managing editor of TechSideline.com.
Yeah, we're going to bring him in July 6th or 7th and start training him on stuff. And then the ACC football kickoff is July 21st. I mean, it's 5 weeks away, 5.5 weeks away.
Yeah, real quick, not to put you on the spot, Chris, but what will your new title be?
I have no clue.
I don't know.
I haven't spent a lot of time. It'll probably be something like pay content coordinator or something like that, maybe. Because that's really, I mean, I'll be lead analyst.
Lead analyst.
I don't know.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Hand of the head honcho.
Right. Hand of the head. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. All right, well, you guys have waited long enough for those that are watching live. We're going to dive into it. I want to explain the rules real quick of how we're going to do the Mount Rushmore. So keep in mind, we are saying the words student athletes, football athletes, men's basketball athletes, and all other athletes. So coaches are not part of this Mount Rushmore.
Right.
And we are going solely off of college careers. Professional careers do not matter for these Tech Sideline Mount Rushmores.
Or in the case of one prominent athlete, things that happened after you got out of college, which didn't necessarily have anything to do with what was going on the field.
Correct.
If you know what I mean.
So let's start with the Virginia Tech football Mount Rushmore.
Well, first of all, let's start with the actual Mount Rushmore.
That's right. Yes.
So I'm going to quiz you guys. I told you not to look it up.
I didn't look it up.
Who is on the actual Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, I was a history major. I should know.
There's
this.
Four of them.
Yeah, right. It's George Washington.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson.
Yes.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Ah, very good.
Wow.
So
is it really?
So, yes, Teddy Roosevelt is the recurring theme when I try to picture who to put on the Mount Rushmore. You always wind up the fourth one, in the case of Virginia Tech Athletics, in my opinion. The fourth one, you're stretching a little bit. Like Teddy Roosevelt, you're stretching a little bit. And I mean, we know about George Washington. He led us in the Revolutionary War and was the first president. Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln led the country through the Civil War and freed the slaves. Teddy Roosevelt, he was president for a while.
Yeah, well,
I don't want to diminish his. Chris is a history guy.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt, charge of the Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War, he led that.
But your average person,
they don't know stuff like that. But when was Mount Rushmore built?
Now Evan's going to start typing.
God, but it was probably a little bit recency bias too.
I think so.
It was built in 1927.
Okay, so Roosevelt had been president in the 19-aughts, I guess.
It's fairly recent.
Yeah, so yeah, fairly recent. And he was he was pretty popular. There's a word that comes to mind that I can't really say online, but he was a for what America was at the time. I mean, he was the tough guy. He was the frontiersman, and he was
is,
also
is
president.
Badass the word?
Yes, that's the word I was going to use.
I've typed badass in articles before. You can say that.
Okay,
on the podcast.
But that's kind of what Teddy Roosevelt was.
So Teddy Roosevelt passed away in 1919. So that would have been
definite recency.
And according to the .gov website, provided leadership when America experienced rapid economic growth as it entered the 20th century, negotiating the construction of the Panama Canal, linking the East and the West.
Yes. He did a lot.
I read that, but, you know, it's just not on the same level as the other three guys, in my opinion.
All right. Okay. So we should probably move into Virginia Tech.
Let's do that, because I will say you bring up a really great point, though, Will, in that I think for a lot of these Mount Rushmores, there are at least two, likely three, that are obvious choices. Uh-huh. But then it gets interesting when you get to that fourth one. So let me preface by saying this, by the way, that Will and Chris, I asked them, even though I think they're going to have similar choices, as I have mine as well, I think we're going to have similar choices, but they have not compared notes.
Right.
So let's start with football. Okay. Those are the Mount Rushmore for Virginia Tech football players here from us at Tech Sideline. Will, the first person that goes on Mount Rushmore, I'm going to be blunt here because I think I know where you're going here. Is it Bruce Smith or is it Michael Vick?
Well, I kind of teased it. If you look at the thumbnail for the podcast, it's back to the original Mount Rushmore. George Washington has a place of prominence on it if you look at it. And in the thumbnail, I put Michael Vick's face over where George Washington would be. I'm not real good with Photoshop, and I was running out of time, and I probably would have added more people, and I should have grayscaled Michael, blah, blah, blah. For me, you're right. It comes down to Vic or Bruce Smith, and it's close, but I think you'd have to put Michael on the front there.
Okay, so that's your first choice. Chris Coleman, who's your first choice?
Same. I never saw Bruce play, but for what the Vic era did for the program, from a national prominence perspective.
That's true.
What that led to, that's to me, is in the fact that he finished third in the Heisman voting. Not that Bruce had a chance to do that because he was a defensive player, so that's not his fault. But I think for the effect Vic had on the perception of the program, and what he did for recruiting and everything like that, then I think that tipped the scales in his favor as far as number one.
Okay.
Yeah. Got Virginia Tech the national championship game. First ever Archie Griffin Award winner as the college football's most valuable player. Heisman Trophy finalist. All of his stats with 3,200 passing yards in two seasons, 1,200 rushing yards.
Yeah, and you can't even look at his stats because, God, there were games back then. Like, remember the UVA game his freshman year? He went like 7 of 9 passing. Like, we stomped a mud hole on UVA. We're up like, what were we up, 31 to...
I think it was 31-7. The final, I think, was
31-7. And I even want to say it was like 28-7 at halftime, and we only outscored them 3-0 in the second half because I don't know if we threw a pass in the second half.
Frank just handed the football off.
Right. So Vic only threw 9 passes that game. So, like, his numbers are not reflective of what type of player he was in that era.
Okay, I mean, can you imagine if you were running the Oregon offense
if you can imagine our current offense with
right.
him. I mean, any modern offense, basically.
Right. You ever think about what life would be like if Michael Vick never came to Virginia Tech?
I don't want to.
And how different, you know, and the reason I bring that up is because you think about the impact he had. That's why he's probably deserving of this.
There's a chance none of us are sitting here.
Right. You're certainly not sitting here, Evan, and Chris might not be sitting here because the beginning of Hokie Central and Tech Sideline coincided with all of this.
Right.
And turbocharged.
And, you know, Virginia Tech, Lane Stadium has this reputation of, for years and years and years, selling out 66,000 people, best fan base in the country, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is, I remember coming to the Rutgers game in 1998, the next to last home game, and there was like 45,000 people there.
May have been a little less than that.
Right. And, and that was in a 54,000 seat stadium at the time, pre-expansion.
Yeah.
Filling up with 66,000 people didn't start happening until after Vic.
Well, yeah, the sellout streak that ran from 1998 to 2012 started with the 1998 UVA game, which was the last game of the year. And then, you know, Frank teased that Michael Vick was something special, and things just kind of took off.
Right.
In 1999.
We were expected to be good. Corso picked us to play for the national title game in August, so there was a lot of hype going into that season.
Yeah. And
you ended the season by beating Alabama 38-7 in the bowl game in 98.
It's really something to think about. Everything lined up. What if Michael Vick had gone to Syracuse or gone to East Carolina? It's really, where would Virginia Tech Athletics be? Would they be in the ACC?
Who knows?
And again, these are rhetorical questions.
The reason I bring that up is, again, because it's fun to think about. Like, if it wasn't, I think that shows his impact, right? The questions we're asking about that.
Thank you, Jim Kavanaugh.
For recruiting.
So, real quick, I'll be honest. If we had to do, we're not going to do an all sports Mount Rushmore, but if we had to do an all sports Mount Rushmore, I'm just going to ask you this. Would Michael Vick be the number one any sports? Would you put him number one?
For the impact on the university. I don't think he's quite like as dominant a player as like Angelo Tenchin.
Right.
But for the impact on the overall athletic department. Because Angelo Tenchin came to Virginia Tech, if not for Michael Vick, you know, who knows if Virginia Tech's in the ACC, in which case, who knows if Angelo Tenchin comes to Virginia Tech? I mean, who knows?
We'll talk about Angelo Tenchin in a little bit. Michael Vick is also number one for me. I assume Bruce Smith is number two on the Virginia Tech football Mount Rushmore for both Will and Chris, correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I've got some accolades here on Bruce Smith. I'll just bring up known as the sack man, according to his Wikipedia page at Virginia Tech. Finished his college career in 1984. Had a total of 71 tackles behind the line of scrimmage for totaling 504 yards, 46 career sacks, including an NCAA leading 22 during his junior season. First team All-American, and the 1984 was given the Outland Trophy, given to the nation's top lineman, and a consensus selection to the All-America team.
And this was all essentially done in three seasons. He played some as a freshman, redshirt freshman, a little bit, but he racked up those stats. I think he had I know he had 16 sacks 1 year and 22 another. I think it was 16 his junior year and 22.
And remember, these are 11-game seasons. And stats for bowl games didn't count.
And bowl games didn't count, right.
And I think – how many bowl games did Tech play in anyway during those 3 years? Maybe like one or two?
He played in the Independence Bowl. And I believe that was it.
Was that the Firewood Bowl?
No. Well, not to drill down too far into that, but that was some minor NCAA violations that had been discovered, and one of the punishments was that I think that was like 1982 or 83, and one of the punishments this wasn't announced publicly, was that if Virginia Tech went to a bowl game, Bruce Smith couldn't play in the bowl game. Mm. Well, they did go to a bowl game in 1984, and the NCAA said, you can't play, and Bruce got an injunction and played.
Right, and then we lost.
And the NCAA has been... Yeah.
Well, they still run on the triple option in 1984?
Yeah.
I guess.
So let me ask you this, Will, because Bruce Smith played at Virginia Tech before the Frank Beamer era.
And I was a student during that time.
So what was it like? I mean, football before Frank Beamer, for those that, you know, maybe are in college now or younger, I mean, what kind of impact did Bruce Smith have on the athletic department, Virginia Tech? Like, did he help put Virginia Tech on the map before, like, lay the foundation before the Beamer era? Like, what kind of legacy does he leave behind?
He didn't, like, spark the program like Michael Vick did. Virginia Tech had very good defenses back then, but they also had lousy schedules. They'd play an 11-game season, and there were 2 to 3 games every year that mattered, that were a real challenge. And those games were Virginia, West Virginia, and in some years, Clemson. And Virginia Tech would typically lose to West Virginia, typically lose to Clemson. You know, so you'd wind up 9-2 or 8-3 or whatever.
Yeah.
So the program kind of was in – I don't know if people who live through there agree or disagree, but it was kind of the same thing every year. You'd show up to watch them slap Richmond and William and Mary and Duke around. And it wasn't that it wasn't fun, you know, but Virginia Tech was a basketball school back then. So to give you one anecdotal example, Duke had a quarterback, my freshman year, named Ben Bennett. Great quarterback. If you look him up, he threw for, I think, over 10,000 yards in his college career. He's a good quarterback. Not that Duke was a great team, but he was a good quarterback. So it was this buildup of Duke coming into Lane Stadium, and I think Bruce alone sacked Ben Bennett 4 times. And just terrified, you know. So that was fun, but it didn't make the program blow up or anything like that, like Michael Vick did for Frank Beamer later.
Yeah, Tech was an independent back then, I remember. No conference.
Yeah. So a lot of fun to watch, and Tech had a lot of good defensive players back then. Every time Bruce did something, you'd go, Bruce.
As they still do now.
Yes. Right. Every time he walks out there or whatever.
Is there any idea what kind of recruit Bruce Smith was? Like, was he – supposed to come in and be the player that
he was. He was fairly highly recruited.
Right. They didn't do star rankings or anything like that back then. But like if like the Newport News Daily Press did, here's our top 10 prospects from the 757 this year, Bruce would have been up there at or near the very top.
But, yeah, and this was back when, you know, Virginia high school football was very, very good, produced a lot of good players. He would have been a top five
guy. Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so here is where it gets fun, because I think everybody had Michael Vick and Bruce Smith on their Virginia Tech football athletes Mount Rushmore. But I'm going to start with Chris Coleman here. Who would you put number three on your Mount Rushmore, Chris?
It's real, real tough between my number three and my number four. Okay. I put Tyrod number three. I think he was like our last megastar. And I think, you know, he was ACC Player of the Year. He led Tech to their last ACC championship. But we won, three ACC championships when Tyrod was playing for the Hokies, either in a starter role or splitting time with Sean Glennon. Just the accolades that he had. Tyrod as a senior was dominant. Tyrod as a senior, I think, in a better offensive system would have been a Heisman Trophy candidate. He was that good in college. So, yeah, he's my number three. And maybe the fact that he's a quarterback, you know, biases me a little bit to put him ahead of my number four. But it was real, real close, but he's my number three.
For me, I went with Corey Moore over Tyrod. I love Tyrod, don't get me wrong. But so if you look at what I've listed so far, Michael Vick, Bruce Smith, and Corey Moore – Bruce Smith and Corey Moore had a national impact in terms of statistics and honors and awards that Tyrod never had. Mm-hmm. Bruce won the Outland Trophy. Corey won the Outland Trophy.
Right.
And they are guys who were first-team All-Americans. Tyrod was a good quarterback at Virginia Tech and won a lot of games, but he didn't sniff the Heisman. He didn't sniff first-team All-American.
His coordinator wasn't Bud Foster. It was Brian Steinspring.
You know, and that's a legit discussion point. I don't want to say argument or whatever, but it's a legit discussion point. I guess for me, you know, Corey Moore was just part of this era where you just – tuned in and went, wow.
And he was so, like when he said something, you listened.
Yeah.
Whether it was welcome to the Terror Dome or whatever.
Or how's it going, Randy?
Yeah, how's it going, Randy? Yeah. He was sort of a larger than life figure.
Yeah.
I would say.
I have Tyrod 3 and I have Corey Moore 4, actually. And I was thinking about it too. And it might be a little bit of recency bias for me. And like you said, the fact that he's a quarterback, but. What he won two ACC championships as a starter, was ACC Player of the Year his senior year. I don't know. I just, when I think about Tyrod, for me growing up, I mean, like you said, the last kind of mega star.
Right.
But I was thinking about for four, though, Will, and I was thinking, like, there's so many different directions you could go. But Corey Moore, like you said, like, think about Teddy Roosevelt, right? Like, he was around for prominence of the United States in the economic. What are we talking about? The Panama Canal. Like, yeah. Corey Moore
Panama
was there.
Panama Canal is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Think about it. To get the Pacific Ocean, you had to go all the way around South America.
Anyways, not to tie in history, but Corey Moore was there at the national championship game. Like you said, like he was that.
He was two-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Was Outland Trophy. Right. He won a couple of those national awards.
I think he won the Nagurski.
Yeah,
unanimous
like
first-team All-American.
Right. He's my number four. It was so, so close between him and Tyrod. And honestly, I think there's a big drop off between, you know, the Tyrod / Corey Moore 3-4 and everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who I would have number five. I've got a few guys in mind who I would have number five if we expanded the Mount Rushmore to a fifth face. Mm. But I don't know. I think there's a big drop off after that top four.
Yeah. So one name to consider is Frank Loria. And I don't say that because he died in a plane crash. Mm-hmm. Frank Loria has a distinction. If I read my charts correctly, he has a distinction no other Virginia Tech football player has. He was a first-team AP All-American twice.
Mm.
Bruce Smith and Corey Moore were first-team All-Americans, but only once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think Bruce was a second-team All-American as a junior, first-team as a senior. And I think it's the same for Corey.
And think about it. Frank Loria played in an era where freshmen weren't allowed to play.
Right.
So he only had three seasons of varsity football at Virginia Tech. Yeah. And in two of those three seasons, he was a first-team AP All-American.
At a time when nobody knew or cared who Virginia Tech was.
Right.
They were never on television.
So that means he was really, really good as a sophomore, and that made everybody take notice and say, whoa, this guy is really, really
enough
good.
AP All-American voters heard of what Frank Loria could do. I doubt any of them saw it.
Frank Beamer had a way of describing him in his book. And when he talked about Loria, you know, played in the same secondary with him. And, you know, Loria wasn't all that big, but football players weren't all that big back then, or at least not like they are now. I forget exactly how he phrased it, but he basically described Loria as a heat-sinking missile. Like he would hit you, and, like, receivers, like, they wouldn't have any breath in their lungs after they got hit by Frank Loria.
Yeah. Was he a two-way player?
No, not that I know of.
Wow, that's a darn good question. I know that he returned punts kicks, I think.
Okay.
And there are some stories associated around that. My Frank Loria knowledge kind of ends with what I can look up in tables.
He had a cousin that used to post on TSL. Hmm. Bruno?
Bruno was Frank Loria's cousin?
Yeah.
Huh. He did get Virginia Tech to the 1966 Liberty Bowl.
That's true.
Yep.
Now, first team AP All-American 66, consensus All-American in 67, named a top six All-America first teams, started 31 games. Yeah, Loria was known for being a physical hitter and for his quickness, and had a sixth sense according to his Wikipedia page. So, anyways, that's a good one.
Well, the guy ended up being a defensive coordinator for Marshall at, like, the age of 23. So he was ahead of his time as far as coaching. And, you know, somebody asked Frank Beamer one time, if Frank Loria were still alive, would you be on, or would he be on your staff? And Frank said, if Frank Loria was still alive, I'd probably be on his staff.
I'd be on his staff. Yeah. One of Frank's better lines.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
It is.
No, and he's got his jersey hung in the north end zone of Lane Stadium. Yep. So that's, and by the way, the first person to chime in, Evan Norris in the chat, he said Frank Loria when the podcast just got started. A couple other names I do want to shout out here that people are suggesting. Cornell Brown, Jeff Holland gives his football Mount Rushmore. He says Bruce Smith, Michael Vick, Corey Moore, and Cornell Brown.
Cornell would be. Cornell's a good pick.
Cornell's close, yeah.
Yeah, close.
Cornell was a four-year guy. I mean,
yeah,
he
was a four-year
starter. He had an impact from the very beginning.
Right.
Eric Johnson writes Bruce Smith, Michael Vick, Jim Pine, and Frank Loria.
Jim Pine was a first-team All-American in 1990.
And again, I think a four-year starter.
Yeah.
And then Derek Moss chimes in, Andre Davis. And it's funny because I asked my dad, who's a lifelong Hokie, who his top four would be. He actually mentioned Andre Davis. And so I'm curious. I mean, he's the greatest Tech receiver of all time?
You know, Andre Davis is actually in the Tech Hall of Fame for football and track. I looked up their list of Tech Hall of Famers today, and he's listed football and track. And
football. Wow.
So he's one of the greatest athletes in Tech history. The problem with Andre is, I mean, he was dominant in 1999, but that was an era where your top receiver caught 30 passes. I mean, if that guy played for Virginia Tech today, I mean, he would catch 70 passes.
70 passes, yep.
Oh, my gosh.
An average, you know, same 20, 25 yards a catch.
All right, let's transition from – that was fun, by the way. So Virginia, that was our Virginia Tech football athletes. And by the way, if you're listening and you're wondering, where is Frank Beamer on this? A reminder, again, athletes we're doing right now. So
in doing my research, this is a little nugget that is neither here nor there, but from – 1995 to 2011, which is 1995 to 2011, 17 seasons, Tech had 34 All-Americans. And this is from HokieSports.com. It's how they list them. And Virginia Tech will list someone as an All-American if they made first, second, or honorable mention. And they have four or five or six organizations, AP, UPI, Football Writers Association of America, American Football Coaches Association, and then maybe one or two others. So they do define it, and that's how you wind up on their All-Americans page. So looking at that page from 1995 to 2011, which was 17 seasons, and that was when Virginia Tech won all of their seven conference championships, was during that 17-season run. 34 All-Americans, so that's two per season, and 15 first-teamers by this criteria. 2012 to 2020, nine seasons, so about half as many. Three All-Americans, so 0.3 per season, and no first-teamers.
And who are those three?
I was about to say, Kendall Fuller, maybe?
Kendall Fuller.
Farley.
One of the Edmonds, Tremaine, I think, in 2017. Mm-hmm. I do not think it was Farley.
No kidding.
But so we'd have to look it up.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus did a Hall of Fame.
J-Ron Hosley, I think, was.
He was. Yeah, but he was 2012, I think, right?
He was done before. His last year was 2011.
By the way, okay. I love J-Ron Hosley. He was such a fun player to watch.
He was a good player. Yeah.
But I talked to some younger Hokies, by the way, who, again, don't know the full history, but a couple of names that came up that I don't know if this Hall of Fame worthy or Mount Rushmore worthy, but Macho Harris, Brandon Flowers.
Brandon Flowers,
Cam Chancellor.
Actually, Flowers would be like in my top seven-ish. I mean, he was a dominant football player.
When you look at the All-America listings, the string of All-America teams he made is long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dominant player.
He had a great NFL career, too, correct? With the Chargers.
He's probably, like, the most, like, natural cornerback Virginia Tech's ever had. Just his instincts were incredible. Right.
Yeah, not nearly the phenomenal athlete that a guy like D'Angelo Hall was.
But just straight instincts and toughness. Just a great football player. Yeah.
All right, so that was fun. Any other thoughts here on football before we transition?
I don't think so.
All right, let's go to our second Tech sideline, Mount Rushmore. This is a men's basketball athletes Mount Rushmore. And I'm excited for this because I think this could go in a little bit of different ways. But let's go ahead and start with Chris Coleman's first men's basketball player on the Mount Rushmore. Who is it?
I put Dell number one, Dell Curry. Great college career. Best shooter in the country first time. My goodness, the number of points he could have scored if they had a three-point line back then. I think when you ask your average Virginia Tech fan, name the first Virginia Tech basketball player that pops into your head, I mean, at least if you're a certain age, I think your average fan would say Dell Curry.
Yeah.
So, to me, Dell's number one.
Okay. So, on the all-time scoring list, Bimbo Cole's 2,484. Dell Curry, 2,389.
So, Dell's number one, though, with a three-point line.
Yeah, he's about 100 points behind Bimbo, and you got to figure.
He certainly made 100. Yeah.
So
what was the line, Dell, from the gobbler?
The turkey.
Yeah.
So here's a little nugget for you. And no, I'll save that for further down the list. Dell Curry is my first. Mm-hmm. So Bimbo is number one in scoring, and I think number two. Let me see, number two or number three in assists. Bimbo's first in scoring and second in assists. That's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. But Virginia Tech didn't win a lot of basketball.
That
games.
I know, and that's. Are we going to go to number two now?
What? Yeah, so we're all going to Dell Curry.
So right? I do want to do the Dell thing. Okay. Unfortunately, I didn't write it down. Dell is number two in scoring, and Dell is up there in steals. A lot of people don't know that Dell I'm not going to say Dell was a good defensive player, but he certainly had an instinct for stealing the ball.
Yeah.
And Dell was coached by
Charlie Moyer.
Moyer. Okay. Yeah. So we all have Dell Curry at number one. I think we're all going to have the same names, but I'm curious of what order we're going in.
We'll see.
I'll go ahead and name mine first for number two.
Okay.
I'm putting J-Rob ahead of Bimbo Coles at number two. All right? And I know statistically, I'm going to think about national relevancy when I put him at number two in the three-state NCAA tournaments. And I think when we think about the Buzz Williams era, I think J-Rob is the face of that era, I think.
J-Rob is on my list.
Okay.
But he's not my number two.
He's not your number two. Right.
But, and I thought about putting him, a spot or two higher, but like Bimbo Cole's his teams were bad. That was bad basketball. It actually amazes me that he's number two in assists in his career because those teams were not good. But I'm not going to hold it against Bimbo that those teams were bad. It's not his fault that, they weren't well coached, right?
Right.
So I can't hold that against him. He was Virginia Tech's first Olympian.
Yes.
And I think that elevates – that's one of the things that elevates that, him above
I think J-Rob. To me, that's why I still have Bimbo number two.
Too. Yeah. So for me, he was just so much fun to watch play. So I had – my senior year in college was Bimbo's freshman year. Now, what a lot of people may not know is that Dell Curry and Bimbo Coles did not overlap. They were one right after the other. My junior year was Dell's last year. My senior year was Bimbo's first year. And I remember watching Bimbo as a freshman. He was a decent basketball player. He would occasionally drive to the basket, and you'd go like, "Whoa, I can't believe he got that one off." And then it was his sophomore year where he took off and he scored 51 points in a game and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I drove up to Lewisburg years ago and did a long interview with Bimbo. And, yes, Bimbo played for some bad teams, but one of the things he also benefited from, I remember him telling me, after his freshman year, all the football players were trying to get him to play football. He was a phenomenal defensive back.
A lot of people will tell you, like Bourbon Street, who posts on our board, he played against Bimbo Coles, I think, in football and basketball. Yeah. And claims Bimbo was better, a better football player in high school than he was basketball player.
And he was a phenomenal all-around athlete. He's also a really good baseball player. And I played against him in softball and got to watch him play softball. The guy had a cannon.
Did you get a hit off him in softball?
Or no, that was off Dell.
Oh, God.
Who, a game-winning hit off
Who
of
was
Dell
a great
Curry.
Baseball pitcher at Virginia Tech.
He was a very good baseball
Dell?
Yeah.
Oh, he got drafted by the Orioles.
He played baseball at Virginia Tech.
His senior year, he went like 8-1.
No, it was crazy. When he was like 26 or 7 years old, he played in this random charity minor league game. Like, he played – like the Kannapolis Intimidators, who were like a single A South Atlantic League, and Del Curry started a game for him and went like 3 or 4 innings and gave up one run. And he hadn't played baseball in years.
Yeah.
So he was very talented.
He was
player.
Either 8-0 or 8-1.
The one loss was like his own throwing error or something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, I never knew that. I'm
your
sorry.
Trivia.
So anyway, we've gone down the rabbit hole.
Yes. Let's go back to Bimbo Coles.
Yeah, so Bimbo was a phenomenal all-around athlete. But, okay, the story he told me was, so at the end of his freshman year, the football players were trying to get him to come out and play football. And he went in to talk to Frankie Allen, because Frankie was the interim coach at the time. Or, trying to remember the timing of everything, but what it wound up being was Frankie said, he basically, and Bimbo told me this, Frankie basically said, please stay on the basketball team. If you play basketball instead of football, you can do whatever you want. I'll give you the ball. You can do whatever you want. And Bimbo's like, well, okay, I'll stay. So he had the green light kind of Steph Curry at Davidson style.
Right.
Whatever
you want
to do.
The green light Eric Green style is a better comparison.
I'm not going to question anything you do. Here's the ball.
Right, right.
You know, and
well, with no structure.
That's part of what made Frankie Allen a bad coach.
Right. Steph Curry had structure at Davidson.
Yeah.
Bimbo Coles didn't have structure. Eric Green didn't have structure. It was just... you're really the only guy who's capable of really being good at this level, so
he was just phenomenally fun to watch, and his name was Bimbo, and he wound up going and being an Olympian. I remember how excited Hokie Nation was at that point in time, and so that's why he's my number two.
There you go. So Dell and Bimbo off the board. I have Bimbo at 3. So Chris Coleman, let's go to you. Who do you have at number 3?
It's real close. And actually, I didn't write these down in any particular order, but I think my third, just based on how I think the fan base would view it, is probably Alan Bristow. He won the NIT, or he was the face of that team that won the NIT in what, 1973?
1973.
And the NIT doesn't mean Jack these days, but it meant a lot back then, because back then, you know, not that many teams, you had to win your conference to make the NCAA tournament, right? So
yes.
So think about these days, like whoever finishes second place in the ACC would be in the NIT, right, if it was still a 16-team field or whatever. So it was a huge, huge deal to win the NIT back then, because you were facing a top 20 team. You had to be really, really good to win that tournament. So he was a great, great player for Tech, and I think that accomplishment will always resonate with old school Tech fans. I also know that there's a few people watching this podcast who probably never heard of Alan Bristow, but he was actually the longtime head coach of the Charlotte Hornets,
mm-hmm.
And Del Curry was his player. He coached Del Curry with the Hornets.
And Alan later became an executive the NBA. He didn't just coach and quit.
Yep. So really, really good basketball guy.
So that's your number three. Will, who you got at number three?
So I've got Alan Bristow, number three. Bimbo scoring 51 points is not the single game record. Bristow holds a single game record with 52 points.
Wow.
Who's it against? Any idea?
I don't know.
And did Bimbo do it in 3 overtimes?
I think it was double overtime.
Double overtime against Southern Miss.
Southern Miss, yeah. And the story I always tell is when Wally Lancaster fouled out, he had 39 points and Bimbo had 38.
Oh, wow.
And Bimbo scored 13 more to get up to 51. So Alan Bristow is kind of a mixed bag. It's interesting. All the stuff Chris said is true. The list of Virginia Tech All-Americans in basketball is very short and very small. And Alan Bristow is not on it.
Right.
Really?
But here's a convincing argument. He only played 3 years. And he scored 1,804 points.
That's a lot of points.
600 points a year at a time when fewer games were being played. Mm-hmm. 600 points a year. If he played 4 years and scored 600 points a year, he'd be the number two scorer in Virginia Tech basketball history.
Right.
Wow.
So his, if you look at, and I'm holding the top 10 list of scorers, he's the only one in the top 10 who didn't play 4 years. Right? So interesting stuff when you really start looking
at it. It's funny they print out Vasayo's full name.
Angel Daniel Vasayo. Yeah, so the top 10 is Bimbo, Dell, Malcolm Delaney, Dale Solomon, who also deserves consideration. Perry Young, A.D. Vasayo. A.D. Vasayo is the number six scorer all time.
Dude, that guy was good.
He was good.
And Alan Bristow, Xavier Dowdell, Bob Ayersman, and Eric Green. Ayersman played in the late 50s and early 60s. Mm-hmm. Now, this is odd. He's listed as playing 4 years, and I thought freshmen didn't play back then.
Maybe there was.
Maybe they did.
Maybe there was two rule changes. Maybe they could, then they couldn't, and I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. So anyway, Bristow third for me as well.
All right, and then number four.
J-Rob. Just the face of his entire era. You know, he's not as good as Nikhil Alexander, but he was here. Nikhil Alexander Walker, excuse me. But he was here for 4 years and was three NCAA tournaments, which no other Virginia Tech team. You know, Tech has never gone to three consecutive NCAA tournaments before. And the one constant in that entire era is Justin Robinson. You can count on one hand the number of Virginia Tech players who have played in three NCAA tournaments in their career. You could probably count on two hands the number of Virginia Tech players who, for their 4 years, won 20-plus games in each of those four years. He's the all-time leader in assists. And he would have blown it away if he hadn't been hurt and missed the end of his senior season.
This is a guy who, just as he was peaking, had to sit down with
My God. You know, his best game of his career was that Syracuse game, and then the next game he got hurt.
Was it 9 threes he made against Syracuse?
Something like that.
Like, it was ridiculous.
And a bunch of assists. I mean, just incredible.
Didn't he have
a – in a pink jersey.
I was about to say, they were wearing the pink jersey.
It was a pink jersey game.
Yeah, yeah, the 2-3 zone, Boeheim did not know what to do that day.
I will never forget that game.
And he essentially didn't play again.
Right, you know, right.
He
until
did,
the NCAA tournament.
But wasn't the same.
Yeah, and so to me, like it's for everything he represents. It's not only he was a talented player, but it's also the accomplishments of the team to a certain extent. He's number four on my list.
Yeah,
and yes. Oh gosh, who did you mention? Tech won the Metro. Dell Solomon. He's real close for me. That he would be my number five.
Yeah, he's one of only four players to have over 2,000 points for Virginia Tech. Dale Solomon is, and was also a good rebounder. I wish I'd seen him play.
And that's the only time Tech ever won a conference tournament.
That's right, 1979.
Yeah, 9, I think.
Yeah. Wow, he was a freshman that year.
Will, you're number four.
I'll go with J-Rob. I got in preparing, I got hung up between Malcolm Delaney and Ace Custis. But J-Rob deserves it more. I don't like the way this sounds. Sorry, Ace. More than those guys do. You know, Malcolm Delaney was extremely productive. He is, let me see, I've got it written down, third all-time in scoring and third in assists. Mm-hmm. So he had a very productive career, but Virginia Tech didn't even go to the NCAA tournament when Malcolm Delaney was here.
Right. And those were very talented teams. It's not like that was, Bimbo Coles and nobody on the team plays defense.
You hand that team to Buzz Williams or Mike Young, and you're going
Sweet 16,
to multiple NCAA tournaments.
Right.
And tremendous amount.
The chemistry on those teams wasn't good behind the scenes, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Delaney's very close to being on mine too, and But I just think the era that J-Rob represents.
Yeah. And you talk me into it right here, so I agree.
Maybe two is a little high for me, but I was just thinking about this, and this is, and I know that Bembo and Bristow, they can't control this, but I mean, J-Rob was getting this done against some of the most elite talent in the country.
Yeah, in the ACC. It's tough. Like, I can't be unbiased because I've met Justin Robinson multiple times. A month before COVID, like the last time I went out before COVID hit, I went to PK's and I talked to Justin Robinson at PK's that night. He was in town for the Tech Pitt game.
Yeah.
Right. And I've sat next to him in the locker room or whatever multiple times after games and talked to him one-on-one. And that's not something I've had a chance to do with anybody else. So I am biased when it comes to that. Maybe I'd have a different feeling if I had been able to talk to Del Curry, Bimbo Coles, well, they're on my list, but, you know, anybody else who's just off the list. But, yeah, there it is. He's on my list. And like I said, retire the jersey.
Yeah. And real quick,
and here's the thing. If you're on the Mount Rushmore, should your jersey not be retired?
The Tech sideline.
The Tech sideline Mount Rushmore, which is more valid than anything else, of course. Right. No.
And I will say, hey, one name to keep in mind, too. How about Eric Green? I mean, ACC Player of the Year, averaged 25 points per game his senior year. I'm not saying he deserves it, but I'm saying I think he deserves honorable mention,
great
recognition.
Player. Played a little bit in the NBA, had a long career overseas.
Still is playing.
Right. And, he led the nation in scoring that year, didn't he?
By the way.
First team All-ACC. Was he ACC Player of the Year?
He was. Can you name the only other player, and I'll say that this guy was a phenom. There's only one other player to win ACC Player of the Year in men's basketball that had a losing record in the ACC. It's Eric Green, and you can name this. Can you name this other superstar that played in the 80s at Maryland?
No.
Len Bias.
What? Len Bias and Eric Green, the only two players of the year who competed for teams with losing ACC records.
Losing ACC records. So okay. They probably went like 6-8.
The ACC was really
when they were loaded. Right. So, yeah, Maryland probably would have been like 30th in the RPI that year or something based on strength of schedule. Now, Eric Green's interesting. Now, here's a trivia for you. Seth Greenberg's last season at Virginia Tech, Eric Green was in the starting lineup. 60% of that team, which tied for last in the ACC, went on to play in the NBA. 60% of the starting lineup. Eric Green, Jarrell Eddy, Dorian Finney-Smith.
Wow.
We finished last.
Chemistry, man.
All right, let's check out the.
So wait a minute. Let's talk about basketball All-Americans. At Virginia Tech. So Malcolm, stick the camera on me. And this is the short list of basketball All-Americans. There's
Del Curry has
one,
much
three, four, five, six, seven. There's like 10 guys on this list.
Del Curry made a lot more lists than everybody else.
So you see, these guys were all mostly honorable mention on one team, and then Dell's got a long string of teams that he was on.
So the only All-Americans that weren't all honorable mention were Dell and Eric Green. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, I think you're reading that correctly.
Wow.
So Chris Smith in 1960 was honorable mention AP. Bucky Keller in 62 was honorable mention. It doesn't say which team. Howard Pardue, who was a pretty darn good player in his time, 1962, honorable mention, AP and UPI.
Chris Smith's another guy who should be very, very close to making this list. He was a dominant player for his era.
He really was.
And again, we'll talk about the recency bias to a certain extent, but I mean, like, what years did Chris Smith play?
Well, he was an honorable mention All-American in 1960, long time ago.
Right, see, I was born in 1983.
Right. And there is
my dad was barely alive when he played, you know what I'm saying? So there is definitely a recency bias here, and it's really hard to compare across eras and things like that.
And Dell was Virginia Tech's only first-team All-American, but that was only by the Basketball Times. He was second-team on AP, Basketball Writers, UPI, and HL. I don't know what HL is. Bimbo was just honorable mention, as good as he was. Bryant Matthews, Zabian Dowdell, Malcolm Delaney, 2 years was honorable mention AP. And Eric Green was third team AP.
If Matthews had been well coached all 4 years instead of just 1 year, then, that guy would have put up some numbers. I mean, he did put up some numbers as a senior.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think if Seth Greenberg had gotten here a couple years earlier, then that guy would have had a really impressive career.
So real quick, my list, Curry, J-Rob, Bimbo, Alan Bristow. Chris, read yours 1-4 again real quick.
Dell, Bimbo, J-Rob, Alan Bristow.
And Will, yours 1 through 4?
Curry, Bimbo, Bristow.
Oh, excuse me. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Bristow was number 3 for me.
Yes.
So Curry, Bimbo, Bristow, then J-Rob.
And mine's the same as his.
There you go. Okay, a couple other people in the comments. Derek Moss says his Del Curry, Bimbo Coles, Malcolm Delaney, Xavien Dowdell. And then Eric says Ace Custis, Bimbo Coles, Del Curry, Allen Bristow is his 4. So there you go. Appreciate everybody chiming in. We'll read those. And we do have one more Mount Rushmore to get through. We're just over an hour into this very fun episode 181 of the Tech Sideline podcast because it's fun. We can kind of go down tangents and kind of go wherever the conversation goes. Hope you're enjoying it just as much as we are. Let's do all other sports at Virginia Tech Mount Rushmore. Will Stewart, I'll lead off with you. Who's number one?
We have already mentioned her name. It's Angela Tencher.
It's a no-doubter,
It's
right?
a no-doubter.
Yeah.
The most, regardless of sport, probably the most dominant athlete ever. It's either her or Michael Vick, but, I mean, she was dominant.
Yeah. And just to this day, beloved. You just mentioned the name Angela Tencher, and everybody's like, wow, yeah. So, Angela, let me get my glasses on here. One of my great regrets is that I never once saw her play.
We tailgated one time in lot 4 for the spring game, and I stood behind the stood up on some
berm.
Something, and watched a game from center field. I forget who they were. I think they were playing Florida State, and of course, you know, she was out there getting shelled the one time I watched her play. Yeah. I mean, so I'm bad luck. What can I say?
So Angela's strikeout numbers are phenomenal. Her ERA is phenomenal. Her record, which I'm sorry I don't have it here, is good, but not as like if she'd pitch for one of the more storied programs in the country, she'd be Rachel Garcia territory, almost unbeatable.
Yeah.
So
I mean, Keely Rochard strikes out a lot of people.
Yeah.
But what was that? I mean, Tencher's going to be like. Will probably still be like twice as many strikeouts as Keely Rochard.
She has the third most strikeouts in NCAA softball history.
Right.
So I did look that up, and I've actually got the printout here. So Monica Abbott of Tennessee is first with 2,440. Kat Osterman of Texas is second with 2,265.
I remember Kat Osterman.
Tencher is third with 2,149. Now, they're the only three pitchers to strike out 2,000 or more batters in their careers. And what I find interesting is that their careers, these three women, their careers spanned 2002 to 2008. In 2005 and 2006, all three of them were pitching in the NCAA.
Wow, that's right.
So it almost makes you wonder, not to diminish any of their accomplishments, was there something going on in softball at the time that caused kind of a dearth of hitting?
Well, I don't think the sport was as popular back then, so there probably weren't as many good hitters.
Maybe.
So my next-door neighbor played she's mid-late 20. Let's see. She's 3 years older than Malcolm, so she's about 25 years old. She played high school softball at Radford and then played college softball for a year at Radford University. So we're having this. She was over at my house last night. We're having this discussion, and I mentioned to her that if you look at the softball career strikeout list, the top 10 to 20, there's almost nobody on it post 2010.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And my neighbor said, oh, that's when they moved the mound back. And I thought, really? So I went and did some research on it. In college, they moved the mound from 40 feet to 43 feet way back in 1988. In high school ball, they moved it back in 2011. So that's what my neighbor's remembering because she was a high school softball player when they moved the mound back in high school. It had already been moved back. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right.
But I read a few articles, and it was way back in 88 because there were articles written back then like you're going to see more hitting now because they moved the mound back 3 feet. And it gave like 200 to 2/10 of a second or something like that.
Well, I mean, so think about it. So before 2011, if you're a high school player and you're – playing against a really, really good pitcher, like you're not necessarily getting the same practice as college players were because you've got three fewer feet.
Yes.
You know, so it's not the same. So you're getting better hitting practice post-2011 because the mound gets moved back, right?
So in the article I read, part of the big reason they moved it back in high school was that the dominant pitchers in high school, since they were 3 feet closer, you couldn't hit them. And the story was about a girl that had thrown a 31-inning game and had only given up one run and lost because the other pitcher pitched a complete game shutout, 31 innings. So they're like, we're time to move the mound back. So
wonder if they'll ever do that in Major League Baseball with as fastest guys throw these days. And I'm not talking so much about, you know, the number of strikeouts. There's a lot of home runs these days, obviously, but that's because the ball is juiced. But like one day, like somebody's going to hit somebody in the head and they might die because some of these guys throw 102 miles an hour these days, right?
Mm.
And like, so what's the point where the human eye can actually, you know, your brain sends a message to your body, oh, get out of the way. Like, how fast do you have? Like, and at one point will a major league pitcher exceed that speed?
Right.
Right.
It reminds me of the NASCAR discussion where they were having about a death a year until Dale Earnhardt died. And then they said, okay, we need to stop messing around and make things more safer and require the Hans device and all this other stuff. And I think since Dale Earnhardt died, pretty much no one has died in the 20 years since then.
Not in NASCAR, I don't think. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, the Hans device. He wore an open-faced helmet.
Right, all that stuff.
All that. He was old school as could be. And now they won't let you be old school. You know?
So things, the larger point is things happen that trigger change.
Right, right.
Yeah. So anyway, that's, we got off way topic. Off way off track there.
So yes, Tincture's number one.
Let me give you some numbers real quick too. I mean, she's 2-time All-American. And I think the greatest achievement too. I mean, I just don't think some people truly understand a college team no-hitting the greatest softball team on the planet.
Yeah.
In Team USA, who had won some ridiculous, like 150-plus consecutive games outside of the Olympics. Because they would do a lot of these scrimmages, exhibitions. I mean, and Angela Tincture should have been on that team. I mean, there's I don't know the full background, but I think that there was some politics involved that she didn't get on that team.
Well, I mean,
she goes out there and no hits them. That's incredible. A college team, no hits, Team USA.
Imagine the best college baseball pitcher. He probably plays for Vanderbilt or something.
Kumar Rocker.
Right, yeah. Imagine Kumar Rocker. Shutting out a Major League All-Star team. Honestly, imagine him going out
complete game shutout.
Complete game shutout, no hitter. Or was it a no hitter? Yeah.
Tincture?
Yeah,
it was a no hitter.
Imagine Rocker pitching a no hitter against Tatis, Ronald Acuña, all those guys. That's what it is, man. What she did.
And that Team USA team, too, that in the late 2000s, that was before the Olympics got the sport got taken away from the Olympics. I mean, that team was – Jessica Mendoza was on that team. Kat Osterman was on that team. It was a
– Jessica Mendoza, who calls Sunday Night Baseball with A-Rod.
Was Jenny Finch on that team?
Yes, believe so.
It's just – I think right before they played Tech, they had beaten Villanova 22-0 or something like that.
It was you're 100%. It was a doubleheader.
And the stories for Scott Thomas saying, yeah, I was going to rotate everybody. I was going to play everybody, and then we kept winning, and I just left Angela in. And
Sometimes plans change.
And my favorite thing was that game was broadcast by ESPN, but it was tape delayed. It didn't air for a couple of weeks after the fact.
Right.
I mean, could you imagine if Twitter was a thing for that? Anyway, so Angela Tincture, number one. Well, let me start with you at number two on your athletes outside of Virginia Tech football, men's basketball, Mount Rushmore. Who's number two behind Tincture?
I would put Queen Harrison number two. Track and field, pretty much only a hurdler, I think. She won national championships. There was one year where, if I remember correctly, I didn't quite write all this down. I think she had an indoor national championship in the 60-meter hurdles. And then outdoor that year in 400-meter hurdles and 100-meter hurdles. So she won multiple national championships, individual, and ran in the Olympics.
Mm. That's extremely – she's also my number two.
Yeah.
I have her two as well.
Yeah.
Okay, number three, Chris.
Oh, kind of off the wall here. I've got Spyridon Julien, number three. He is Virginia Tech's first national champion in any sport. What was a hammer throw?
You ever hear of him, Evan?
I have not.
Now, right, so the common denominator with all these other sports athletes is they all played for Virginia Tech after Virginia Tech joined the ACC. So, like, Tech's Olympic sports has gone from, you know, being like 100th in the Director's Cup to, I don't know where they would have finished this year, but I think they were like 99th or something in 1999. Now
the A-10 years were
they might have set their own record. They might have broken their record this year for highest. They might have finished, you know, top 30, top 25, something like that this year. Yeah. So the ACC's made a big it has made a big difference. But yeah, Spyridon Julien from Greece. I've got him number three. You know, maybe for a whole career overall accomplishments, maybe shouldn't be on here, but I think it's something to be said that he won Virginia Tech's first national championship, and what a big deal that was at the time when he did it.
I put him at my number four.
Okay.
For the same reason. He has the most national championships of any individual.
Does he?
Huh, okay. Four national championships in weight throw and hammer throw.
Yeah.
And I don't know much about the throwing events to know what's different there. I put Makai Lewis number three.
I've got him recency as well,
bias.
Will.
I'll call it recency bias. And Makai also benefits from we were able to see what he did.
Right. I remember watching it live when he won it.
Yeah.
I remember watching it live at Champs when he won the national championship.
That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that national championship matchup. It was the two he'd won before that.
Yeah.
He went through number one, number two, and number four.
Seed.
He was the eight seed, and he beat, if I remember correctly, not in this order, number four, number two, and number one.
I actually think that was the order, actually. I think it was 4-2-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or 4-1-2, something like
that. He ran the gauntlet.
Yeah. And
as a freshman.
And so, like I said, some of that is recency bias, and some of it is just the visibility. And like when Spyridon Julien won his national championships, people noticed, but it wasn't on TV, and right. People didn't freak out in bars because they were watching it on ESPN.
Right.
And
yeah.
It was just different. It created a huge amount of traffic on the website and on Twitter, what Makai did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I bumped him up to third over Spyridon.
And what's really neat, too, is that Makai's career is not done, and he still has, what, 3 years of eligibility left, 2 years of eligibility?
He could potentially, you know, move up. Like, he's not quite on my list.
Yeah.
He's maybe, like, fifth or sixth on my list, but he could certainly
be on this. He wins another national title.
Yeah, yeah, he's on the list.
One more nugget I want to get out there about him. If you Google Virginia Tech national champions, you wind up in a page on Hokiesports.com that lists all the Hokies who have won national championships in their sport or event. And so assuming that list is correct and complete, Makai Lewis is the only non-track and field athlete to win an individual national championship.
Yeah,
I thought that was interesting.
That sounds right, yeah.
All right, so yeah, I had Makai at three as well. I'll start with number four here. I was peeking at your list. I think you might have. I have Patrick Nayarko, is that how you say his name?
Yes.
We've got him at four because, men's soccer's had a really great, like, who's arguably the best player in men's soccer history? I would say it's him, right?
It's Narco. I think he was seventh in the MLS draft.
Yep.
Virginia Tech made the College Cup, the Final Four, back in 2007.
And they beat North Carolina
for the first time ever. Yeah, and he was the star of that team.
Yeah.
And went on to a long career. He even capped for Ghana a couple times. So he was an international player. Big-time talent. He's number four on my list. I went with him over Daniel Pereira because Pereira just, like, he, number one pick in the draft, he's already starting for Austin.
He was only here for 2 years, though. It was only
exactly, and the second year was COVID shortened.
Right.
So it was like we never felt the full impact of recruiting him to Virginia Tech and everything like that, whereas we did feel the full impact of Patrick Nyarko.
I'm sorry, just Ja'Cory Patterson went through my mind, and even if Ja'Cory had accomplished enough to be on the Mount Rushmore, the fact that he transferred out.
Right, and you not doing it. Sorry.
I'm not sorry, yeah. I can't go there.
Yeah, I mean, now if he finished his career at Tech, he probably good chance he'd be on here.
And that's part of the reason that I put Makai Lewis on my Mount Rushmore is people love him. They want to look at his face up there on Mount Rushmore, like, oh, that guy. Yeah.
No, and I think Makai has the chance. I mean, it's going to be tough to overtake Tincher. But I think he has the chance. I think his ceiling is maybe even pushing number two on that Mount Rushmore.
I think he could potentially do that. Now, the thing about wrestling is, in wrestling, you can only win one national championship a year, right? Now, track and field, you can win
indoor and outdoor and multiple events.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So the track does have a little bit of an advantage there.
Queen won three national championships in just 1 year.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. For those reasons.
Right.
Well, anyways, and who knows? I mean, maybe his ceiling's even number one, too. I mean, you're right. He is beloved. Do you think about Virginia Tech athletes right now that are just I mean, he's a household name. Everybody knows who Makai Lewis is, right?
Right.
So, and I think he's my age, but he just finished his technical sophomore year of school, and anyways, it's going to be really fun to watch his career play out.
He's going to be a sixth year senior one day.
Jeff Holland has his All Other Sports Hall of Fame. He's got Tincture, Makai Lewis. Say his name again.
Spiridon is how we pronounce it.
Is three, and then Queen Harrison is his Mount Rushmore. Rick French, Tincture's no-hitter against Team USA was epic. Yes, it was, no doubt. Let's see, and I think that is all sports. Eric Johnson, Makai Lewis. Oh, this is his all sports, like everything together. He's got Makai Lewis, Michael Vick, Bruce Smith, Del Curry on his everything. You put everything on one Mount Rushmore. So, anyways, appreciate everybody chiming in. That's the fun thing. This is it's subjective and it's fun. Yeah, everyone we mentioned are all great.
And we could do this 5 years from now, and maybe another tech athlete or two have knocked people off this. So it's like if you rebuilt the real Mount Rushmore, like. You got to bump somebody off for FDR, right? for Teddy. Yeah, you got to bump off his cousin Teddy.
Yeah, that's right. True.
And one question here before we wrap things up. Just your if you could put a fifth head on any Hall of Fame of just athlete you love the most from Virginia Tech. I'm not saying they deserve to be on there, but just a favorite, like who would you put on there? Like for me, it would be Sam Rogers. I just love Sam Rogers and everything he embodies. I'm not saying he deserves it, but that's like my picking with my heart pick if I could. Who would you go with?
Jamon Chris? Gordon. It's not even a question.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I do love me some Jamon. The wit and wisdom of Jamon Gordon.
Yeah.
Is that who you go to?
I don't know. There's a number of people, but he mentions Jamon Gordon's name, and I was trying to think who are the athletes that I really love. Like people love Jimmy Caruth back in the day, you know, but Jimmy didn't really
play 4 games in the NBA.
Yeah.
Wow.
You don't know who Jimmy
Caruth is. I have no idea who it is. I'm sorry.
It was before my time.
Alvaro Torre would not make it.
Alvaro Torre would not be on the list.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, hey, I do want to wrap up the podcast with this. So, you know, Chris, help me with the name of the soccer tournament going on right now.
The Euros?
The Euros. Yeah. So I'm watching the Euros yesterday.
It's the 2020 Euros.
Yeah, I know. It's
got if you caught that, yeah. Because they were supposed to be last summer.
I'm watching the 2020 Euros yesterday, and they're doing their in-studio. And there are a bunch of people I've never heard of before doing the in-studio work in between games. And sure enough, there's analyst Chris Coleman on TV.
Chris Coleman, the former Wells National coach.
Yes. He's on TV.
I was watching it when I was in Richmond over the weekend, my buddy's house, and Chris Coleman was breaking down the Wells Switzerland game, and I used to when he was the Wells national coach, and whenever they lost a game, I would get tweets from angry Welshmen about his tactical setups and things like that during games.
You should respond.
I should.
You should totally mess around with him. Anyways, I was laughing so hard. I was just like, because he's talked about it before off the air, Chris, before. But if you're watching the Euros, I'm serious. In studio, Chris Coleman.
Yep.
I think you're in better shape than that, Chris Coleman. I'm going to go ahead and say
that. I appreciate that.
Apparently, there's an up-and-coming golfer named Will Stewart. I got emails this weekend about how he didn't quite qualify for some tournament.
All I have is there's apparently a Supreme Court justice in the 1700s named Charles Evan Hughes. And anytime I Google my
name, he was one award of
the
winner?
First. Like, he was like the first. Court, yeah. He's actually kind of important. Maybe he'll be on a Supreme Court Justice Mount Rushmore one day. But anyways, well, that's an hour and a half of just fun content, all great Virginia Tech athletes, all very deserving of the recognition. I'm pretty sure everyone we said is probably, if not all, in the Virginia Tech Hall of Fame. They've got to be close to it. Right. And so, anyways, that was a ton of fun. That's what the summer podcasts are all about. If you're watching live right now on YouTube, we have 18 likes. If you would please.
That is not nearly enough.
Like and subscribe. If you're watching archive, please comment. And however you're listening, I feel we're always shouting out the listeners. But again, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher. I believe there's a way to like and subscribe and review. Please do all of that if you're listening. We greatly appreciate you taking the time to do that. All right, Chris, TechSideline.com. Anything up on the website right now that you recommend for those watching or listening? Anything coming up this week to be on the lookout for?
What did we write yesterday? Oh, yeah, we did our scouting report of the 2021 wide receivers yesterday, Brandon Patterson and I. Today I'm going to write something about Kalon LeBourne, who visited Blacksburg over the weekend, the former top 50 running back recruit who committed to Florida State while driving the Lamborghini.
Yeah, he drove the Lamborghini in.
Yeah, and he visited Tech this weekend. He's on the market. So I'm going to have an article and some thoughts about that whole thing.
He's from Virginia Beach, right?
He is.
Do you remember what high school he went to?
Yeah, it was the same one as is the defensive tackle Crosby, who bombed out at Tennessee.
Right.
Because we've got a picture of him on our database of both of them at school wearing Virginia Tech gear.
I remember that picture. And they posted that on Twitter. I remember that picture, uh-huh. Yep.
Yep. So, yeah, we're going to have some thoughts on that.
There we go.
Bishop Sullivan? Is that where they went?
That would have been my guess. Yeah. The coach there was Chris somebody, Chris I Scott. Think. Yeah.
Will, any parting thoughts before we sign off?
No, none whatsoever. Appreciate the content. It was fun researching, and yes, I actually did.
Yeah, work, thanks did for doing all the. I felt like I had good notes, but not. I mean, everything printed off.
Yeah, much
and
better
charts
notes than
and,
me. Yeah.
So this was fun. Well, look forward to our next podcast. And again, if you have a fun podcast idea that we could do this summer, anything you'd like to hear us talk about, please reach out to us on the message boards or on Twitter. We'd love to hear your ideas as we have more fun content coming your way over the summer. That'll wrap things up. Episode 181 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. A reminder to follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at Tech Sideline. You can be part of the Tech Sideline family today. Get a subscription at TechSideline.com. For our managing editor to my left, Chris Coleman, our founder and general manager across the way, Will Stewart. Behind the scenes, the best podcast producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart. I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes, saying so long. Thanks so much for watching and listening to episode 181 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, presented by the Southeast Regional Training Center. Have a great week, Hokies, and we'll talk to you soon.